You're listening to the Product Podcast by Product School.
Without further ado, we'd love to introduce our speaker for tonight. His name is Rahul, and he's a group product manager for Yelp. So let's give him a round of applause.
Hello. Good. You can hear me? All right. Well, thanks so much, Sam. Really excited to be here. This is a big group. Super exciting. How many folks in here are current PMs? Show of hands. Okay, a few people. Former PMs, anybody? Okay, hopefully we'll get you back into the fold. And everybody else, I presume, is like looking to become a PM, is interested in the world of PMing, I guess. Okay, cool. All right. Let me tell you about why I'm here and what I do. Okay, so very quick background. I've been in the world of PMing for close to 10 years now. And I've done a bunch of different things over the years. And so, well, let's get this clicker working. There you go. So what I do right now. So I work at Yelp. I do product management there. I run a team of PMs, at Yelp. And I've been there for close to 5 years. And what I do at Yelp is I run product for a couple of different areas around our partnerships teams, our, a lot of like our infrastructure on, billing and invoicing and reporting stuff. But also manage product for our national business. And so, it's a fun little business, which I, you know, when I started about 5 years ago was like a little tiny thing, but it's now a nine digit business. So it's a multi-millions business that's scaled with like hundreds of sales reps and, marketing people and multiple PMs now working in that area. So it's been a fun little journey kind of growing that. And so I've been at Yelp. I love it working there. And before that I was at Yahoo. Any former Yahoos here in the room? Hey, go blue, go purple. But I was at Yahoo for almost 4 years. One of my former coworkers actually is back there. And during my time there, I worked on a bunch of different monetization products. So working on search syndication. I also built some interesting little business around kind of a developer API product that we monetized, which was really fun. Worked on shopping for a little while, which was Yahoo Shopping. And just generally search, which was at the time about a $4 billion business approximately. And so it was a fun area to work on. I've also worked at a little startup called Geodelic, which is now dead. It's not active anymore. Geodelic was a little company where we're trying to essentially use location data. This was back in 2008, where the iPhone had just come out, and we were trying to figure out how we can do hyper-local experiences. So when you walk into an airport, can we tell you where the baggage carousel is and tell you like what time your flight's landing from which gate and give you like really interesting local data, like at an airport or at an amusement park or things like that. Very interesting product, but didn't get a lot of traction. So we only lasted about 3 years there. And previous to that, I was at business school at UCLA. I did a bunch of engineering roles. Back in the early 2000s, I was working on, being a search buyer. I did some stuff with a company called Shopzilla, where we were buying search advertising very early on in the early days of Google. Also did a master's in computer science at USC as well. So a lot of different experiences over the years. I've also done business development. I've done fundraising, things as well. So, and PMing is where I found my kind of like true calling. So that's why I'm here. All right. And fun activity, mention here. Like, I love to sail. I was doing it till last year until I crashed a boat. If you want to ask me more about that, I can tell you. But I love sailing. So it's a fun little activity. Very similar to PMing, actually, because it's very much driven by what you're seeing and taking decisions based on data and insight as you kind of do things. So that's me. All right. So what are we here? What are we here talking about? Right. So a lot of people are, when I started to put this thing together, a lot of people talk a lot about like growth and building consumer products and figuring out like how do you get more users coming into like using those products. And I realized that a lot of people talk about like how do you make money from those users. And so let's take a hypothetical example. There's this like new app out there that's all about connecting friends with each other. Hypothetical example. And it's a product where people can talk to each other, and it turns out that there's some businesses on that product as well. And you're working as a PM in this product, and you're like, you're the first PM in this place, and you're like, hey, we got to make money with this thing. right? Let's take that hypothetical situation. We're going to use that example quite a bit through this whole conversation. And the CEO comes to you and says, we have to make money, and you're in charge of making money for us. And you know, there's a bunch of different ways you can think about this problem, right? You can be like, hey, we're gonna have these people paying us to log into this website. We can think about having some of these businesses, you know, being charged to get be on this website. We can be like, hey, these businesses can show ads on this website, or we can sell some data. And so there's all these different ways that we can make money, but we don't know how to do this. Like, we don't know how to prove out what's the best way to do this, right? And so let's take that hypothetical example and figure out what's the best way for us to kind of go through that journey. What I'm not going to do here is give you a template, go do this and go do this and go do this. I'm going to give you a few ideas and questions as you think about this area, and that'll help you hopefully understand what's the right approach to take as you approach each of these problems in your own unique situations as a PM. So first thing, world of PMing. I always apply this rubric to myself all the time. And here's kind of the four-step process, and we'll kind of do a little bit of this over here. Create a hypothesis. Okay, so in this particular case, the hypothesis is that businesses want to spend money advertising on this, this mystery app that we have, where friends are connecting with each other, right? That's just a hypothesis. Can we test this hypothesis in some way? Let's figure out, is there a way for us to either build something so we can test it out, or even better, survey users or something else to kind of understand what that is, right? Then if that fails, we create a new hypothesis, right? And we try it again. If it succeeds, then scale the hell out of it, right? Get more advertisers, or get more people to pay for this stuff over and over and over again, right? So that's my rubric of being a PM, but we're going to apply that in here a little bit. Before we do that, let's talk a little bit about what is the right monetization model, right? There's a lot of monetization models out there, right? And every one of these apps that you've heard about, they all do different things. But broadly, they fall into these three buckets, right? And there's other stuff out there, but these are the kind of the big ones, if you will. Advertising, right? When you think about advertising, this is the kind of the old world of display advertising when, you see a banner ad or whatever. They're charging on an impression basis. So every one of those ads that shows up to a user, the advertiser pays a small amount for that, right? It's a little bean counter going at the background saying, we counted this person, it's this much, right? That was the old way of doing things, and we'll talk a little bit about the history there as well. Cost per click advertising, right? Cost per click is when it's the Google search kind of the model that they invented, which was, hey, every time a user clicks on the ad, that's the only time you will pay for this. Right? You won't pay for it any otherwise. But then you go into this world where, okay, well, that's great, but if I'm an advertiser, or if I'm using this model of paying for something, how much value am I driving out of this? And that's where we get to this world of transactions, right? So transactions is the model where you're paying on a per lead basis. So let's take in the lead is the world of phone calls. In the old days, there was hey, we will only pay when we actually get a phone call into our call center, right? And so people would be hey, we're going to pay per lead. When you think about the world of delivery apps, they pay on a per order. Right? Every time we drive an order to that restaurant, the restaurant pays a certain amount to us. Right? It's even more kind of a thing where we're measuring based on what value we're driving for you. And that word value will keep coming up through this conversation as well. So you might remember that. Then we have all these kind of what we call subscription as a service kind of apps, right? These are the sales forces of the world, and they charge in a cost per seat model, which is hey, per user, every time we have one user logging into the service, you'll pay a certain amount. Cost per data usage, this is the best example of this is AT&T, every time you're paying for your cell phone bill, you're paying on a data usage, right? Fixed fees is the oldest world out there. This is where, hey, you pay a certain amount per month. It doesn't matter how much you use of it, none of that stuff, right? It's a fixed fee. And of course, e-commerce is somewhere in there as well. This is the Amazon world, right? Not much to that everybody understands what that is. And so the question to ask yourself is, what is the right model for the product that you're offering, right? What is the best way to figure out that piece, right? Because that's one of the most important things for you to figure out. All right. This is the second most important thing after a product hypothesis. Keep it simple, right? something that the military uses as well. Keep it simple, stupid. The KISS logic, which is, if you're trying to sell something and it's very hard to understand that, people are probably not going to buy it, right? Like if I was to say, like, in this mystery app of yours, like, you know what, businesses are going to pay some amount, but the moment like a consumer like engages with that business, then the consumer gets some money back. But you know what, it's only some percentage, and that percentage changes over time. Forget about it. You're not going to work, right? Keep it really simple, right? I'll give you a few examples of this. Google. The advertiser pays when a user clicks on our ad. Plain and simple, right? There's all this other stuff that they do, but that's at the core. That's all it is, right? With Amazon, like the you know, the person who's like essentially selling the good in the marketplace is making a percentage on every sale that they're making, right? Simple. Nothing too complicated. Nothing too cute. Keep it really simple, right? You think about Facebook, like they're charging for every time an advertiser sees an ad or clicks on an ad. Plain and simple, right? So keep it really simple. That's the kind of the more important thing there. So the other part of it, which I'm going to talk about for a little bit, is history. Very quick like comments here. Anybody here knows how the world of TV advertising works? How people buy TV ads today?
Based on basically somehow they guesstimate maybe Nielsen ratings or whatever, but they figure out how many people they think are going to be viewing that time slot, and then based on that, there's kind of a scale.
Yeah.
More people viewing, more eyeballs, the higher the prices.
Yeah, so you kind of hit it. So it's related to eyeballs. It's related to like this Nielsen rating. So historically, what used to happen is the way the TV market used to work is that there's these big companies, ABC and NBC and these folks, and there's like local affiliates. So there'd be the ABC channel for like San Francisco, ABC channel for San Jose, and et cetera. And what would happen is that you have this new show that you're kind of rolling out, and you would say, hey, like, we've got these slots for advertising. They're 30-second slots or 1-minute slots or whatever else, and we're going to be like, first, like the ABC, the national like brand, would try to sell those slots out. And they would say, hey, like, we expect this many people to watch this show, and so on a per-impression basis or a per-eyeball basis, this is what it's going to cost you to buy, right? And if they couldn't sell it, they would then sell, like, give those slots away to the local regional thing as well. A lot of times they would guarantee some slots for them as well. And then that person would now be like, okay, we're going to sell it to the Toyota of San Francisco. So you'll see a little ad for Toyota of San Francisco. If they can't sell it as well, they'll be like, you know what? We're just going to show the ad for the other ABC, like, local TV show that local news that we show every evening. Like that's why you'll see that, like, an ad for like the local TV news sometimes. What if nobody can do it? Then they would like run an auction, and they start to do like a lot more complicated things. The point I'm trying to get to you is that traditionally this whole world worked on how many eyeballs could we get for a given show and for that given ad, right? And so back in the early 2000s, when you thought about like the display world, when it started to kind of happen, they were like, cool, like, what do we do here? Like, what's the best way for us to build a new monetization model? They were like, let's just copy the TV world, right? So it's the same buyers. Same people who are buying TV ads are also now buying like display ads on the internet. Why don't we charge them the same exact way? Right? So when the Yahoos of the world came along, they were like, this is how many people came to our site, and kind of similar to that Nielsen rating, and this is how much we TV people charge, so we're going to charge the same amount per eyeball, and this is how many people you'll get. And you can get an ad for like the whole of Yahoo all over the US, or you can get it at an individual market or whatever else. So that's kind of how they built that model out. Why am I giving you this whole spiel about this? Is history. Like, when you're trying to design a product, like a monetization model, you want to try to understand, like, historically what's happened in a similar market, right? If you're trying to build a product and there's like very similar examples that have happened over historically, just copy that. Like, you don't need to like go invent the wheel, right? And so that was kind of a very important takeaway for me as well. The next thing I want to talk to you about a little bit is about capturing value and giving value. I kind of hinted at this very early on, but I'll kind of like reiterate this. What does this mean, right? When you are, and I'll give the example of an advertising product, because you're like essentially there's three different stakeholders. There's the advertiser, there's the consumer, and then there's the actual entity that's running this business, right? And so who's capturing value and who's giving away value? Do folks understand what value means? Give them thumbs up, thumbs down. Okay. what I'm trying to get to is like this idea of like when I'm charging on a per impression basis, then the advertiser doesn't have really a way to like evaluate if it's like a good thing that they're buying, because really they want to get people to come in and buy something potentially, right? But if I do something on a per transaction basis that I explored before, maybe it's not very good value for the for this business that I'm trying to run, because I don't make money unless someone actually goes in, which is not a great experience for me. So there's some middle ground there, right? And so when you think about your own monetization model, you want to understand in your own market that you're in, what is the right amount of value to give and what's the right amount of value to capture, right? I'll give you a couple examples here. This is from, I took a screenshot from Google AdWords. Best monetization product out there, right? Last sentence, best of all, you'll only pay when people click or call. Right? You will only be paying when someone's actually clicking on that ad. So I am responsible for only driving clicks to you, but you're responsible for taking those clicks and converting those to like actual buyers or whatever else that you want to do with those people. Right? Or if someone's calling into your call center, you need to get them to like now, you know, do something with you. That's not my job. But you will only pay me when we do that. Super interesting, right? Also notice the wording. We're gonna talk about marketing in a few minutes, but you will only pay when you click or call. So when you think about like how you're gonna go to market and like kind of market your product, you wanna get that clear messaging across as to like how someone's actually gonna be paying for this. Same thing with like, this was from Salesforce. I took a screenshot from Salesforce. You will pay $25 per user per month. Very simple, right? That's all you will pay, right? And if you add more users, that's your problem, right? Like you're a business, you're growing, you're using more Salesforce, then you'll pay me more. If you have fewer people, then you will pay me less, right? And so my value and your value is totally aligned. We're trying to do the same things here, right? Imagine if Salesforce started charging $1,000 independent of whether you have one person using it or whether you have 100 people using it. That would be a bad experience, right? In that particular situation. What if Salesforce started charging based on a number of logins, right? Let's take that hypothetical example. That'd be really weird, because that means that the more I use your Salesforce, that means the more I have to pay. It's kind of weird, because you know we want this product to be useful for us, but you know we want to be capturing value the right way as well. So something to always be thinking about, like what's the right way to capture value and give up value. Pricing, always a fun part. So you've figured out this like this product, and you're gonna be like essentially charging on a, let's take this hypothetical example, like you're gonna charge on a transaction basis. How much money do you take? You take 10%? Do you take 5%? Do you take 15%? Like what do you do? How do you figure this out? It's a really hard question, right? Turns out this is like not an easy question to answer. And we could probably spend the next like 2 hours just talking about this problem. But I'll give you a few kind of quick tips, right? First thing is never ask your customers how much to charge. Never. Like they will never give you the right answer. You know why? Because a couple of things. One is they don't know. Two, they are probably, if they know or they have an understanding of what they want to pay, they'll probably not tell you. Like, why would they want to? So there's ways to get to that answer. You can always be asking other questions about like, how much value do you derive from this product that I'm offering? Or, you know, how do you use this product that I'm offering in some way? And then you can start to get answers. The other thing is it's an art and a science. Like, the science part of it is maybe you experiment a bunch and you try to learn some of these things. The art piece may be that you go look at your competition and understand what they're doing, right? Like, maybe, if your competition's charging, like in the case of Salesforce, they're charging $25 and you're building a product, maybe you should be charging $15 and see how it works, right? But try to find out, like, do research there. The other part of it, which I think is important, is like it's you don't have to get it perfect the first time you do it. But if you don't get it right or close to right, your product will fail because of this. Right? But the other thing about this is like it's easy to experiment with this. Right? You could start off with a price point and very quickly start to experiment with it. And so something to kind of keep in mind as well. And I'm going to do some Q&A in the end, so feel free to ask me any questions at the end, by the way, of like any of these kind of things or like any other tips or any other advice on this kind of stuff. We do a lot of stuff with this thing at Yelp. Like we constantly are experimenting with different pricing for our clients, so it's a very interesting subject. As you can see, I'm a history buff, so I'm going to like throw another history lesson. Who in here remembers the launch of AdWords, or remembers the launch of Google, or the first time they used Google? Right. Anybody before 2005? Okay, a few people. Anybody before 2000? Ooh, okay. I took that screenshot from like the kind of the PR release for AdWords, right? Anybody who doesn't know, AdWords is the most successful monetization product out there. It drives 80% of Google's revenue today, or even more than that. And just read the first few sentences, right? You are the award-winning Google search engine. We have the immediate availability of AdWords, this new program that enables advertisers to purchase affordable keyword advertising, right? They had this like vision of like, hey, like if we can essentially charge advertisers on a per-click basis back then, that we would be able to now get a lot of advertisers coming in through the door, right? Interesting, they bought this company actually back in the day. That's how they kind of got to this world. Another fun fact for you is that Yahoo actually had entered this market even before them, and they had actually had a competing product. They'd bought a company called Overture later, but Overture was kind of the first player of buying, kind of starting this concept of keyword advertising, which gets me to the second slide here, second screenshot here. From 2004, there's this idea of paid inclusion that Yahoo introduced back in 2004. They were starting to lose a little bit of market share to Google back then, and they were going to try out this new product. Anybody remember here what's paid inclusion? Okay, very quick like synopsis. The idea was that you could essentially pay Yahoo a certain amount, and your organic search rankings would somehow be boosted / shown with more prominence. You can see all kinds of problems there, right? Even in this group. So what was the kind of the takeaway here? One is, in the Google's case, they made that trade-off very clearly. They would separate this organic world from the advertising world, one. Second trade-off that they made is they would charge on a per-click basis. And third is that they stuck to the initial product that they built and kind of iterated on that product, right, trying to change their business model, right? Which is a very important takeaway. Versus with Yahoo over here, they launched this new product. It actually got them into a lot of hot soup. The FCC ended up like investigating them. They were hauled in front of Congress. There were new rules passed about this, about what search engines can do and can't do. And this did not help their market share use case at all. Like, in fact, after they launched this product, their market share dropped even faster. Right? They were trying to make a trade-off between what to give their consumers and what to give their advertisers, and they chose the wrong goals. Right? So making that trade-off, they did not do the right thing for both of those parties. Right? So that's kind of a big takeaway for me. The question here is like, do you know how much testing went into it prior? Any former Yahoos here who can probably add in, but like my understanding is they went through a lot of this. You know, they were like, there was a lot of like interest in this from advertisers, but they did not go in and understand like what does that mean for consumers. So we'll talk about that in a bit, about like what testing this means when we're built, when offering a monetization product, but that was clearly not done in the right way. So that comes to this kind of key moment here, which I want to call out, which is you've always got these three stakeholders always in your like in any monetization model that you're building. You've got this consumer who's trying to use your product, right? When you think about this like this app like where you're trying to have friends connect with each other or whatever, like they're all trying to do that. You've got your own product, which is that you want to make money in this product, right? In some way. And then you've got some customer, right? And the customer and the consumer could be the same person, right? In the case of Amazon, for example, it's the same person a lot of times. Are they satisfied with what they're buying, right? And so the question for you always is to try to understand there's a tension between these three things, right? If you make the consumer experience really awesome, you probably are going to end up in a situation where you can't make a lot of money from these customers. If you do a lot of things for the customer, which is what the Yahoo experience did there, the consumer is going to be really unhappy, right? And so the key question for you when you're thinking about this rubric is, what is the right way to measure satisfaction among these three dimensions? Right? What is the right metric that you want to be thinking about when you think about this, right? So when you think about Google, for example, and search advertising, they care a lot about, for example, what is the cost per click that the advertiser is paying? What is the ad load on a given page? Right? Like how many ads are being shown? So the consumers like essentially can think about that. They also think about like what is called a bounce rate, which is like when people come to a page, are they like bouncing out? Are they unhappy with this page in some way? And then obviously there's a revenue aspect of it, like how much money are they making? And then there's a conversion rate metric, right? How many people are we converting from that ad impression to somebody actually clicking on that ad? Right? Because that's really important. And then taking some action based on that, right? And that's something that they measure very carefully. Did they go buy something? Did they actually now call up the business? Did they actually engage in that business in some way? Right? And so that's really important. And so there's always this tension. And so when you're thinking about that monetization model and figuring out like what is the right way to like offer pricing in the market, you want to be thinking about this very carefully. Okay? Which time do you have? Okay. All right. So now you've got this product that you're kind of thinking about taking to market. You've kind of figured out some monetization model around it. Let's say for the moment it's an impression basis. Let's keep it very simple. Or did we say transactions before? We said transactions before, so let's do that. And now we want to essentially now offer this to customers in some way, right? That now gets into a whole another world of like bottlenecks. Like, there's three different ways to do this generally in the market today. Like, people will offer a product self-serve. Like, you can go into some website, and you can sign up for everything yourself. Like, the customer doesn't ever talk to anybody, right? The second bucket is you have a sales force that you're these people are actually calling up these people, or there's someone who's like willing to pick up the phone and say, hey, like, I'm your person. I'm going to help you like buy this thing. Or you go through like a wholesaler, right? Like you're like, hey, I'm just going to give this thing to Costco and Costco is someone going to sell this thing for me. Right? Imagine Costco selling an ad program. That would be so weird, but but you can think about that model there. There's a company called Samsara that does that with, they're trying to do things around data platform for fleets. And so they sell these like wholesale to fleet manufacturers and they kind of use that kind of that model there. So what are the pros and cons, right? Self-serve really seems very appealing, but it's a lot of work. Like you effectively are now building a new way for like users to sign up, like figure out like what's the right model for them to like now engage with their like product, what's the pricing. Everything's very transparent now. So there's like a whole other risk of that thing. It can be very expensive, right? Like you're now like trying to figure out like you already invest in engineers, you got to invest now in a product like person. It becomes a prioritization problem. Like, do you now focus on trying to build this, or do you focus on like trying to get this product out in some way and testing it out, right? A lot of folks tend to what they end up doing is that they're like, we'll figure the self-serve thing out for later. We'll try to have some salespeople that we can find off the street and have them call people up or vice versa. So what are the pros and cons of having a sales force? It's pretty easy to find salespeople, actually, if you pay them, right? How many people in this room are salespeople, by the way? Okay, good. So you can find a lot of salespeople. You can give them the right incentives. You kind of like set all that structure up. There's a little bit of a complexity of like, you know, how much do you pay them? Like, what's the right incentive to set up? What should you be encouraging them to sell, right? Or discouraging them to do? This is a human being, so there's like, they're going to be talking. They got to represent the product the right way. They got to talk about it the right way. They got to be doing the right things. And there's like emotions and people involved. And so that person's having a bad day. That means your product's going to have a bad day. Right? And so, you got to think about like what that means for your product. Right? And so, so that's pretty important. And the third one I think is like, it can be interesting. The problem is that you have to spend a lot of time to get that first deal, right? Like, imagine trying to get Costco to sell something for you. Right? That's a pretty complicated endeavor, right? And so how do you make that happen at scale is pretty challenging. So I tend to see wholesale, like, those products tend to be, like, much later in the world. But my general, like, recommendation about these is, like, usually, like, people try out with a sales force. They'll hire one person, hire two people. They'll try to get some traction going. You can see some things. Be like, okay, this is something interesting. We're also starting to learn some things from the market now. You know, what are people buying at different price points? Because you can kind of hide all that complexity away from the market. Because to one customer, you can sell it for $15, and the next person, you can sell it for 10%, and like try different models out and see what's resonating very quickly, learn a bunch of things. And then you're like, okay, like a year in or like 6 months in, you're going to take that and be like, now apply that to your individual, to your self-serve product. But if you want to do scale, if you want to really build a product out, you have to have a self-serve kind of model, right? A couple of years ago, quick historical context, Snapchat was always selling through a Salesforce. And, you know, they were like, okay, 2 years ago, they were like, hey, we're going to change to like a full self-serve model. And, you know, right after they started, went public, they went through this transition. It was pretty ugly for them. They had a lot of issues. They had a few earnings calls where they were like wildly missing because they were going through this transition and it was not going well for them. So you can't, it's not always easy. And so something that's very important to think about. So let's review this for a few minutes, right? Do your customers perceive a fair value for the product that you're offering? Is it too overly priced? Is it underpriced? Like, you want to figure out the right thing there. Is it easy to explain? And is there some historical context about it, right? If you can't find a historical, like, kind of similar product out there, and the market offering, you're probably, something's off. Like, you probably want to keep looking until you find something similar. At least you want to have that pitch. But like, hey, this is just like that. Like, people do this all the time. You're just doing the same thing, but in the online world. Like, that's a common pitch you hear. Are you making trade-offs the right way? You do not want to screw over let's say you've got this little app that's got a few thousand users or like maybe a million users or whatever. And you're like, hey, I want to like now start monetizing this. And you totally screw over that million users, right? Next thing you know, you've lost them. Like, they're not coming back. Right? And so you want to be very careful about not destroying that trust there. And so you want to find the kind of the balance of like that and like what product you're building and trying to make money at the same time. Are you going to market the right way, right? And we're going to talk about marketing in a few minutes, but in the way that you're going to market, is it like a Salesforce? Is it a self-serve product? Like, what's the right way that you want to be offering this product? So you can kind of test this out. And we talked about like what the best model early on is. All right, so you've now figured out a price. You've figured out like this like product that you're going to offer. Let's say this hypothetical product where businesses can offer like some transaction on this like friends connecting with each other. We take a 15% cut. And then like some new business comes along. Let's call this business like Shake Shack, right? And they're like, hey, we're going to offer, we want to be on this platform, but we only want to pay 10%. Right? So this gets to like, discounting. Like, what is the behavior that you're trying to incent, right? And is it short-term behavior? Are you trying to get people to just get on the site or like, are you on the app? Or are you trying to stay with the app for a long time? And, you know, you want to think about like what behavior you're trying to incent. For like some examples here at Yelp, for example, we think a lot about when we're signing up business owners. If we give them a promo, are we trying to give them a promo that gets them to just sign up? Or are we trying to give them a promo that gets them to stay longer with us? Right, and there's a different types of promos that you could offer to kind of engage that thing. And you'll see a lot of that happen online. The second thing is, does this behavior help your business? Right, what you don't want, for example, is a lot of people to sign up. I see this a lot. Like, I've personally experienced it with like a lot of delivery apps. They're like, you know, use this thing to like sign up, right? And they use this coupon, and we'll give you the first order free. What happens? Everybody tries the first order. Right? Everybody in here is trying a first order for some place, but has probably not used it after that, right? Wrong behavior. That's probably not what they want, right? And so you want to make sure that you're incenting the right behavior, right? A different model could be that you order the first one on your dime, and I'll pay for the second one for free, right? Or I'll pay you 50% off for the second and third one for free. Like, that could be a model, right? But how do you incent the right behavior there? Are you thinking long term? Like, that's super important. Like, again, going back to that example with the Yahoo versus the Google one, Google was thinking long term there. Very early on, they were like, a year after they started, they were like, hey, we're going to like make sure that we're not building the wrong things here. Right? We're not going to like screw over the product. Are you able to measure success correctly? Right? So one of the things that always happens, and I've heard so many stories of startups, especially in the delivery space early on, was they started offering all these like promos. They had no way to measure, like, how many of these are being used? How many of these people, like, actually are retaining? Like, you know, what type of products are they actually buying? Like, are they just, Are they buying the cheapest menu item? Are they buying the most fancy menu item? Like, you know, what's happening with them? They didn't have any of those metrics. And so they would go into the VC meeting like 6 months later and the VC would be like, what's happening? And they're like, I don't know. Like, people are buying a lot of stuff, but nobody's staying. You know, like, and we burned through all this VC cash now. We want more money. And you're like, oh. They probably got more cash, but you know, that's a long story. But the point is, like, are you able to measure all this correctly, right? So when you're offering the right incentives, make sure that you're thinking about what you want to measure before you start offering that incentive, and make sure you have the right tracking in place, right way to like evaluate that success, and so on. And then the last question you always have to ask yourself, like, okay, I've got this thing. What next? Right? Going back to the original thing, like, we had a hypothesis, right? Like if we offer this incentive, we will get like users to like retain longer, or we will get users to spend X dollars more. Then if there's success, what happens? Are you going to scale this thing more? Or is it like just an experiment? If you scale it, what happens to your overall economics of this product that you're offering? Like all these things that you got to be thinking about. And you want to do it early on, not do it after you've like, you know, blown through like a couple of $1 million of VC funding. All right. Let's take this, like, this is a fun topic and we can talk a lot about it, but I'll spend a few minutes on it. But now that you've got this product and you want to experiment with trying to figure out like how to make this better or change it, right? Like you built this initial product. You're like, now I'm going to try a new hypothesis out. I'm going to try a new price. I'm going to try a new incentive, new promo, or I'm going to do like a different flow and the user signing up, like different things that you want to try out. But it's important to remember, like everything that you change now is going to change the way you like make money, right? Big difference. And so let's say the same example that we're talking about, like we're giving transaction dollars and we're taking 15% and we want to now move to a new model, right? Let's say we're going to take a flat fee of like $1 every time for every transaction. We don't care about this whole 15% business. So question for like this group, right, is should we roll this, like, let's say it's all self-serve. Should we roll this out to everybody? Should we try it out with some people? Who do we try it out with, right? And the most important thing to remember is that you want to test it out. You want to be very careful when you're testing this out and test it out with a representative sample of what you're going to have in the end. Right? I've seen some examples where someone took a sample where, here's one example that I remember. They were trying to roll out this product where they're going to change something for the overall market, that marketplace that they had, and they rolled it out for one category. The behavior of like advertisers in that category is completely different from like the overall marketplace. They tried it out, it went great, and they're like, okay, we're going to roll this out. Roll it out, and everything blows up. Right, wrong way to construct the experiment. Right? So do you want to like have a random sample? A lot of things that we do at Yelp, for example, are geographic. So we'll try an experiment out. We'll say, we'll only sell this product to advertisers in Kansas City. Right? We think that that's a pretty representative sample of everybody else. Like, we'll try things like that out. We're always trying to cohort users. And then the next question that you want to ask yourself is, should you be cohorting these like set of like buyers of your product? Or should you be like testing against like a random sample of users? Right? Because if you're like, let's take the same example, like where we're charging some percentage for this transaction, right? Should I now only show this like new product to advertisers? Or should I just show this to some sets of users randomly? Right? What do we do? And so, generally speaking, when you're trying to change a business model, you want to you want to experiment that with your buyer. If you're keeping the business model same, but the way that users are engaging with that business model is changing, you want to experiment with different sets of users. Right? Does that make sense? Thumbs up? Thumbs down? Okay. And then you measure the right things. Again, going back to the framework we talked about, make sure you have the right metric. You're thinking about all the trade-offs and the value that you're measuring across these different, about consumers, about customers, about users, making sure that you're thinking about all those different folks and measuring the right metric along each of those different things. Because if you don't do that, then you may miss like a blind spot. And the next thing you know, like when you roll this out, something else completely unintended consequences happen as a consequence. Yeah. But let's say for a moment you don't have this like self-serve channel. You have a real sales team. And now you've like scaled this product a little bit. You've got 5 salespeople, and you're like, hey, I want to now test out a new model. How would you do this with people? It's kind of weird, right? Like, you have 5 salespeople. You're gonna be like, hey, salespeople, person number 6, we're gonna like now have you sell something different, and we're gonna give you a completely different pay structure because that's what you're gonna do. This is a real person. Like, it can be weird. And so, how do you set that up the right way so that like that person is successful, but also that you feel like this is not gonna like destroy the team? Because if that person does really well, then everybody else is gonna be like, I want to be on doing that. But that person does badly, then this person's gonna like have a lot of like bad, you know, juju like all over the office. Like, it's gonna be really weird. It's like, how do you make sure that like doesn't happen, right? And so, couple of tips there. I think one is you can do this, but do it when there's enough scale, right? If you don't have enough scale, if you don't have like 30, 40 salespeople, where you have multiple teams and so on, it's probably not a good idea to do it. And if you're doing it at a smaller scale, then you probably want to set it up such that you're like effectively like telling people very transparently, hey, we're going to try new things out today, or we're going to give you the flexibility to try A or B or C out. And you tell me what you think is the best thing that works. But if you're in this mode where I'm going to like secretly test it out with like a small sample of people, you don't want to do that when you have a very small team. You're going to get a lot of like bad juju, as I said, in the office. Yeah, this is a fun topic. So if you have questions on this, like happy to chat, because it's a very, it can lead to a lot of bad consequences if it's not done right. So, all right. So you've rolled out this product. You're testing it out. You're like trying to do some new things on the consumer experience. You're trying to do things on how you sell it. How do you make sure that you're tracking this, right? And so as a PM, the first thing I tell all PMs is build a spreadsheet for tracking all your metrics, right? And literally break it down along those 3 dimensions that I told you. Like, what is a user metric? What is a kind of the metric for your customer? And what's the metric for your product, right? And then track those very clearly and understand like how those are changing as you're kind of trying new things out. Because you're going to, once you go through this loop, you're going to constantly have new hypotheses. You're going to be like, okay, I'm going to try out like a new user experience, or I'm going to try out a new business model, or I'm going to try out like this new feature that I add, or I'm going to like roll out this incremental product, or I'm going to try all these different things out now, right? And so, so you want to start to like build a spreadsheet. The other thing is like, as you're doing this, like, making sure that like this experiment is representative of like the overall population, pretty important. And then always ask yourself, like, is the hypothesis making sense? A lot of times folks will be like trying to run an experiment and they would have almost forgotten what the original hypothesis is. Because they're like, oh, I had this interesting hypothesis, but you know what? As I kind of started to do some designs, or I started to do some pricing things, I came up with this new hypothesis and I totally forgot the old thing. Right. And so make sure that you're always thinking about the original hypothesis and tweak that if you want to. But like, I literally have asked sometimes people like write it on a big thing and like put it in front of you, right? Because like you remember that in your face, like always. And then the last thing is, if the experiment's not working, don't wait too long. Like, feel free to always walk away from something. Right. I will say this as a PM. The best PMs always know when to walk away, right? You tried this new feature out where you changed a button color or something for this product that you have, and it didn't work. And like people are like, okay, I'm going to change this other color. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to make this more complicated now. But they're not fundamentally understanding that it's not working for some other bigger reason, right? And so being able to like walk away and so understanding, hey, this is not a good thing. Let's try out a completely different type of hypothesis. Right. You hear so many startups saying like, hey, I tried this initial experiment out, it didn't work, and I pivoted my project thing to something different, right? And so it's kind of the same model. Like, you should be able to pivot that product out and be like, okay, this is not working. I want to try something new. That's super important. And you want to take that, when you do that pivot, like, try to take the learnings from that first experiment. Maybe, like, you know what? The whole thing didn't work, but there was like one nugget of like users were really engaging with something on that page that were, you know, that they weren't doing before because you made this change. Wow, that's interesting. Like, can we take that and like start to apply more of that in some way? Like, that's something that's, you can do a lot. And so, but you want to get into the metrics to understand that. Last couple of slides here. All right, so you've got all this product, you're like getting all this going. We talked a little bit about like incentives and promos, but where does marketing fit in? Should you start running billboard ads now? Should you start like giving out those coupons and like all that kind of stuff? You know, what should be the model and how do you do it? And a lot of people will be like, oh, it's not my PM job. Like, that's not what I want to do. But it is, because it impacts your product. Right? If you do it the right way, marketing can have huge impact. But if you don't do it the right way, it can have the opposite effect. Because everybody's going to be laughing at your billboard and nobody's going to use your product anymore. Right? If it's the wrong marketing. So what metric are you trying to move? Right? Like when you think about like billboards, for example, let's take that example. I love billboards. If you drive on the 101, there's a million billboards. And I always ask myself, like, what is the metric that they're trying to move? Are they trying to get more users? Are they trying to get those people to come back to the location more often? Are they trying to do something different? Right? But there's always a thing that they're trying to do, right? The best ones are like when Oracle World is happening or Dreamforce is happening, come see us at this booth. Like, that's the thing that they're always saying. I'm always curious to know if they're like actually measuring how many people like came in because of that billboard. But that's always an interesting question. Like, what metric are you trying to move? Are you trying to build a sustainable business, right? And we talked a little bit about this, but like making sure that like that business that you're trying to build is like for the long term. You're not doing something short term just to like squeeze out some money from these users or from these advertisers so you can walk away. Right? Because once you do that, you're never going to get the product back up. I remember this from my very early days. I was at a company called Shopzilla back in the day. It used to be known as BizRate actually when I started. What we used to do is it was an e-commerce kind of comparison shopping engine. This was before there was Google Shopping or even Frugal. It was before Frugal, actually. That was the original like shopping product that they had, where you go in on Google and you would search for like Nikon camera, and there'd be a bunch of these sites that would come up, Price Grabber and Shopzilla and like all these different places. You click onto their thing, and then they would show like a bunch of all these other places that are buying like showing a Nikon camera, and you would go in and then buy something. Right? You could buy from Amazon, you could buy from Best Buy, you could buy from a bunch of different places. Right? It was a great model, and then we're like, great, like, why don't we start buying some ads on Google? We start doing that. We're like, turns out that we can buy some ads here and we can make more money if we get those users to click on these sites, like a Best Buy or Amazon or wherever else. It turned out that was a really bad idea, because what we're trying to do is like moving people just like along this funnel. Right? Two things happened. One is Google realized people are doing this and they're like, okay, we're going to build our own thing. Two, the people who are buying from us, like the Best Buys of the world, were like, this is stupid. Like, why don't we just buy directly from Google? So they screwed, like, they were like walking away from us. And so this business grew by almost like $50 million in a year, which was on a business that was like $100 million by then. But it was like a 50% growth in that year. Like, we just like turned on the machine and we're like making so much money. And then 2 years later, it was like the business was done. Like, we sold the company in 2005 for like $500 million. And then I think 5 years later, they sold it for like a fifth of what they bought it for, the buyers. Crazy, because they were like completely dependent on this arbitrage model. And so always ask yourself, like, are we doing arbitrage here? Are we trying to like really build a sustainable product? And then is your marketing metrics driven? Right? Like, a lot of people will be like, dude, you got to get a billboard going, because you know what? The moment people see you on the 101, everything's good. Like, people are going to start using your product. Right? Or you got to buy that TV ad. Like, you know, it's going to be the big thing. Like, it's going to be like opening day for baseball on Friday. If you get like a little slot during the Giants game, it's golden. It's like, you're going to take off at that point. But are you really metrics driven? Are you trying to drive a metric? Are you trying to measure that metric very clearly and have a clear understanding between that marketing that you're buying and that metric that you're trying to drive? Right? Maybe you're trying to use a coupon code there. right, to kind of drive that. I don't know. And the other thing about marketing is, are you disciplined about it? I see this happen a lot. Like, people will be like, we're going to try out marketing for a quarter. We saw some success. It was kind of okay. We're going to walk away from this. Or we tried something. It failed. We're going to, like, completely give up. We're going to try it a couple of quarters later. It's never like this complete, like, this behavior that we're trying to constantly keep tweaking, keep experimenting, keep trying different things out. I almost would say that, like, marketing and product need to go together, where you build a product, and you understand, like, how do you get, like, people coming to use that product, how to engage with that product more. And so there's a marketing aspect that's constantly kind of, like, connected to that. Right? And it should be very disciplined about that. All right. Last slide. A lot of different takeaways here. One is, take the time to define the business model, right? Like, make sure you get it right. Look at the history of it. Look at, like, what other people are doing. Don't try to reinvent the wheel. Don't come up with something cute, you know? Keep it simple. Make trade-offs for the right reasons. Don't try to get, like, start approaching this with, like, a short-term mentality. There's a lot of pressure, right? Like, I worked at a startup. A lot of times you're like, hey, we only have, like, bandwidth for one more quarter. We got to get this right, and, like, otherwise this whole thing's going to blow up. But when you're doing that, make sure that you're doing it for the right reasons. Right? And if you're doing in a quarter, maybe you're like, hey, you know what? We're going to, like, do something here over here that's going to, like, help us, like, make more money. But when you're, like, making the next change, understand that you made that choice earlier, and it's not a choice that you want to keep making over and over and over again. Define your go-to-market approach, like, how you're going to sell this product and all that kind of stuff. We talked a little bit about experimentation, how it's important to experiment, how to kind of keep tweaking your hypothesis. A little bit about sales teams. Happy to answer any questions about that afterwards. And the last thing is, like, marketing is really powerful. Like, you want to use that as a good leverage point. Cool. Thanks for your time. We appreciate it. Anybody have any questions I can answer? Question.
If you are at a company, you just got to a stage where you have a monetization product team and a core product team. How do you work with your core product people to keep them honest?
Yeah.
Driving.
So the question was, like, if you have a monetization product team and you have a core kind of product team, and how do you get these two people to kind of be aligned and, like, making sure that, like, they're thinking about, like, things. I go back to the concept of metrics and trade-offs. Like, we talked about this a little bit ago. Like, if you were to get in a room and say, like, we all are in this place together, and we need to define the right metrics for us as a company, for our consumers or users, and our customers, where we're going to make money from. Let's put those all down. Let's all agree those are the right metrics. And now let's make sure that we're all working together to move those metrics, right? One of the ways that we think about it at Yelp, for example, is that our consumer teams, our goals are to drive users. Right? That's one of their fundamental goals. If they don't drive enough users, we can't make money with them with advertising. But once they do drive users, our job is to take those users and make money from those using advertising. But with a key mindset that, like, if we don't show the right advertising, or we, like, show too much advertising, these users are not going to come back. So we have that common understanding between the two of us, so that every time we're, like, making changes and we're having conversations, we have that common alignment. So that's really important.
Again, as someone in charge of multiple product teams, how is it that you, in the day-to-day, find something where you'd like to, you know, initiate iterating on a product or deploying something new? Does that come from the top down, or do you look at the different data sets that you're getting from the data that comes in to make that decision?
Yeah, I think the question is about, like, how do you kind of figure out the product kind of design process, and, like, does it come top down, or do you kind of, like, figure out based on something else? I always tell this to, like, all PMs, which is that there's no owner of a product idea, right? Like, there's people, the product ideas are everywhere, right? Especially at Yelp, like, you know, we're very much in the belief that, like, you know, they can come from anywhere. And, you know, we in fact have aliases internally for people, like, just send random product ideas. And so, and all PMs get to see it. And so what we do a lot of times is that we're getting ideas from all these different sources. we've got our own metrics that we're like looking at a product, and we're constantly thinking about like, hey, how do we like move a metric? Right? Every quarter, we think about like what metric are we trying to move, and what's the right product to be building to move that metric? Right? And then we take those metrics and we take those products, and then we kind of go through this process of like, what is it? What does it look like? What's the right way to like think about like how we measure success, and what are we making the right trade-offs? And then going and then building that product out and testing a hypothesis and then trading on it, right?
Talk a little bit about something you mentioned earlier, like the PM knows when to walk away.
Yeah.
Because, like, in my experience, some products just take off further down the line compared to, like, showing you returns in, like, 6 months or a year.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, the question is, like, you know, the idea of, like, walking away and trying to understand, you know, because a lot of times, like, products will only get traction, like, 6 months, 9 months, a year down the line. It's a good question. I would say that, like, if a product didn't get traction early on, there's something fundamental, like something that was wrong either with the product or with the way users were trying to find that product, like marketing or any of that kind of stuff, or the way you package that product or the pricing or all that kind of stuff was off. Especially when you think about monetization. You know, consumer products are a little bit different, but when you think about monetization products, something was fundamentally off there. And so a lot of times what they do is that people will start tweaking the pricing or start tweaking like the way the product's being offered or things like that. And that's what causes it to get traction like later on. It's not that the product was the same. Something changed a little bit that caused that change, especially with monetization products. Consumer products are a little bit different because there users have to have discovery and like they don't even find it. Like how do you get to that place? But a lot of times monetization, that's not the problem. The problem is how do you make money from it? And so a little bit different there. Out the back there.
So thinking on like the sales experimentation phase that you mentioned, like say if your goal was to increase engagement, what would be some metrics that you should look into?
Yeah. So the question here was like, if you're looking at like trying to grow engagement for a product, how do you think about what metrics that matter? Right. It's a good question. And I don't build that many consumer products. And so when you think about engagement for consumer products, it's like, you know, page views per user is like a one metric that a lot of people talk about, but it's a very flawed metric actually, because you can try to build more page views and you can make the experience very clunky. That way you can get a lot of page views. Not a good idea. Another fun story from my Yahoo days, I can tell you about that. A lot of other ones that people care about is like, what action are they trying to take? And what was the time to take that action? Like how quickly did they take that action? What's the repeat rate? Like how often are people coming back? One metric that we always think about is like how many logins per day or how many logins per 7 days? And are we able to move that person coming back over and over again? And so that's something that's pretty interesting. Those would be kind of interesting ones. On the monetization front, I'm trying to think of what are good like engagement metrics. It'd be pretty similar, I would say, like, you know, how often is that person engaging with, like, our kind of funnel to buy things? How often are they engaging to come back and, like, look at our particular, like, you know, on the case of Yelp, like, our business owner's website or things like that? Like, those are the kind of things that we care about. Question here.
You talked about building, like, spreadsheet models, you know, when you're starting a new,
yeah,
say, particular product experiment. In your experience, what percentage of sort of the input data that you're measuring, collecting, and putting into that spreadsheet is sort of like manually kind of like gone out and searched for, and what percentage of it is sort of, you know, automatically feeding into that spreadsheet? And what's like, you know, good best practices for trying to automate the data collection? So, I mean, it's a broad question, but...
Yeah, yeah. So the question is like how much of it, when you're trying to put together a spreadsheet, like how much of it is like you have to go in and like try to collect it, or like versus like how much of it is like automatic and can it pull that all that kind of stuff together? I'm sure a lot of you folks here like are using GA or whatever else for your products, or like thinking about using something of that. A lot of that makes it pretty easy actually. You can kind of use GA with like a lot of automation in some way. But that being said, I would say very early on, it doesn't have to be. You could be like, hey, I'm going to like make this pretty clanky. Like it's probably going to be like something in the logs I pulled together. You know, early on in like a startup that I worked, like it was very much like you literally would go through like your thing of like, hey, how many people bought this thing or how many people engaged with this thing? Like literally go account through your log lines and like input it like once a day, because it would take you 10 minutes to do that versus trying to do like something very complicated and build a full automated experience around that. So early on, I would say a lot of it can be pretty hand-holdy, but you want to get from there to something more automated fairly early on. The good news is like the tool set's gotten pretty fancy nowadays that you can kind of do a lot of this stuff like in a pretty automated fashion, right, if you're using the right tools. Back there. Yeah, the question is like, you know, how often, how early on should you be like talking about revenue models and like, how important is it to get early alignment on this? It's a good question. There's two schools of thought on this. Like, it's never too early, at least to have a shared understanding of it. And the other school of thought is like, you know, don't talk about it until you have a ton of traction, right? Which is somewhat the preferred format, if you will. I would say this, right? Like, I would say as a PM, you should always be thinking about it. You may not want to, like, have that conversation with engineers or designers and so on, but, like, as a PM, you should always be thinking about it. If you're not, then you're, like, kind of, like, doing a disservice to your product. But, you know, you may not want to talk with your whole team about, like, hey, we're going to start putting ads on this thing, like, starting this date or whatever. But, you know, you should be, like, very comfortable in your head, like, thinking of, like, hey, what does this mean tomorrow if there's, like, a monetization angle to this, like, how would that work? You don't want to spend a ton of time on it necessarily, but at least at the very least, you should be thinking about it.
You mentioned pricing experimentation as an example, right? And there are some one-off experiments you can do, for example, what prices you suggest, or in the case of ads, like what budgets you suggest for people to use. How do you use those experiments to kind of come up with a model to find what the optimal price that you should be suggesting for pricing something that is, right? Because you're trying to maximize revenue as a whole, right? So that might mean more users at a smaller price or less users at a higher price. So how do you put that together to figure that out?
Yeah, if you're talking to economists, they'll be like, we want to draw this beautiful graph of like different price points and how much revenue we can make. Right? Every economist loves drawing these graphs, these price elasticity graphs. But the challenge with that is you can't really do that in the real world. So you're trying to get like essentially a few points along that graph to draw patterns. You can do this via like, obviously you don't want to, as I mentioned, don't ask for what you're going to charge for your product, but you can try to understand like what competition is doing. Try to understand like, hey, what is the value for this product for a particular thing? Here's an example, right? Like we talked about this transaction use case. People on my website are mostly ordering lunch. Lunch on average is $10. I'm going to take 15% of this, $1.50. What's the margin on average, like, lunch place, like, a gross margin? It's probably, like, $4, $3. You're already taking, like, $1.50 out of this thing. Like, I don't know if they're going to be paying 15%. Maybe not. Right? Will they be if you, like, have a lot of scale? Maybe. I don't know. And so what if you did 10%? Maybe that's a little more reasonable, right? And so you have to start to put that mental model together of, like, hey, what is the business model that your consumers have, your customers have, and where does that fit in terms of like what the price point that you're offering? Right? I just did that like very quickly, but if you were to do a few analysis of like, hey, what's your like customer base look like? And, you know, like do some surveying of like, what is their size of their business? What's the average order size or these things? And you start to understand like, hey, what are they willing to like actually give up to get this additional customer? Yeah. The question is like, you know, APIs and you know, that model and like, you know, where does that fit in here? I would say a lot of API providers are trying to provide a charge on a per usage basis of some sort, right? Like they're, hey, per 1,000 calls, like here's how much you pay, or like for every, I think Twilio does it like for every phone number set up, like here's how much you pay and per minute after that or something of that sort. So it's kind of related to the same kind of concept of like per usage in some fashion. But again, there's a lot of models out there. Per usage models tend to work out really well because again, the value share between like the folks who are running the API and the folks who are using the API is very, we're very aligned there, right? As much as you use it, you pay for it. And I only get paid when you use it, right? And so there's no flat fee. There's no like thing wherein it doesn't matter what you use the API for. Like it's all completely aligned based on like your usage of the data. And so those tend to work the best with APIs, I would say. Yeah. So the question is like, what's the difference between a program manager and a product manager and a technical product manager or like anything else? It depends. each company is different. You know, if you're like you're a new PM, like want to be a PM or want to be a product manager or program manager, I would say spend the time researching the role, talking to people at the company. We don't have program managers. We have a lot of product managers. And so each team is different. Each company is different. And they do different things, right? A lot of times, a program manager at Microsoft, for example, is very similar to a product manager at other companies, right? And so, different things. Last couple of questions. One over there.
Yes, I guess just going back to your concept about when you monetize, when you create, you monetize a product, and that's sort of pissing off your users too much with that. I'm wondering if you could like talk a bit more about that, especially with, I guess, the whole Facebook and the data.
Yeah. So the question is like, you know, obviously there's a lot of questions, right? The question was like, there's a lot of backlash about user data and like, you know, there's a new world out there about like how this data is being used. And this, obviously this data is very valuable for advertising. You know, how does that change given the future? What are your thoughts on it? So I would say that it still goes back to that same kind of like mental model. Like, is this data being used the right way? And are users driving, are they seeing commensurate value from it as a consequence, right? And if that exists, then you know, it'll always be fine with the idea that users understand that and perceive that very clearly. I think there's a bit of a disconnect happening right now because a lot of users are saying, no, we don't see that value, but you're sucking all this data up from us and using it in ways that I originally did not intend it to be used for, right? And so that value doesn't seem to be equal anymore. And so that's why there's like this tension being created. But if their value is like very clearly visible, then you know, that's great, right? And so, as a PM, like that's what you should be thinking about. Like, hey, what's the value creation? Who's capturing that value? And you know, is that equal for everybody involved in the ecosystem? Last question. Yeah, the question is like, you know, what's the automation tools that we use for experimentation, and it depends on like where the company is. I would say like obviously a lot of websites use Google Analytics, and so like if you're trying out any consumer web experiments, it's pretty easy. It's free. You can go use it. You can try different things out with it. You can add tags. You can kind of like add pixels very easily. Go start seeing like what's changing as you try different experiments out with users. It's pretty awesome. Fun fact about Google Analytics, it's actually never used by Google itself. So, you know, it's a fun little fact about like whether it's a good product to use or not. But like for every other startup out there, it's a great product, right? It's free and it does a lot of work for us. When you start to get into like more complex experimentation around like trying to sell a product or like trying to be like a product where there's money flowing through stuff, then you want to be able to like log that data. There's a lot of like data warehouse tools out there that you can use to kind of log data very easily. If you're using AWS or Amazon services, then there's a lot of like tools available on it to make that very easy. There's a lot of experimentation tools that like some of these like newer startups are trying to offer as well. trying to think off the top of my head, which was like very common. I can't remember off the top of my head, but like there's a bunch of tools out there that you can just like use for like dropping pixels and seeing, kind of run an A/B test on the users very quickly and seeing what happens and stuff like that too. So, yeah. Cool. Well, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. Thanks for coming.